This is the Epilogue Audio Experience.
You are listening to the Artist Podcast with me, Sujata. Stay tuned. We have been having more than our share of fun as the festive season began, and of course fun is as important as work, and so we decided to take a mini break as the festive season began. But now we are back till the end of the year to be with all of you. Hope you guys are having your share of fun too, to keep your mental health and well-being at the optimal. Our guest for today is Mr. Akshay Rathi, who is a film exhibitor and distributor with operations spread across central Indian states of Maharashtra, Madhya Pradesh and Chhattisgarh. His legacy is 70 years old, which is a family legacy. And also Akshay has been a pioneer in the process of consolidation of the film exhibition sector by orchestrating a first of its kind alliance between single screen cinemas of his chain with the Cinepolis, which is one of the largest exhibition chains in the world that operates from Mexico. Hi Akshay, welcome to our podcast, The Artist, and thank you for being here and sharing your views on something that I've always wanted to understand, and that is the audience in the interiors of India, the small town India, where you and your family have a legacy. You have been running theatres in the interiors for more than 70 plus years, primarily in Maharashtra, Chhattisgarh and Madhya Pradesh. So yeah, it's so lovely to have you on the podcast. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sushita, for having me over. It's absolutely a pleasure. And like you pointed out, it's a legacy business that our family has been running for a little over 70 years. And to come out and speak about it, about the sector, its nuances, the working ways, the pure romance of, you know, being at the movies and being at the helm of a job that that welcomes people to come in for a few hours, have their bit of escapism and walk out with a smile on their face. It's truly overwhelming. So looking forward to this chat.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, just to start off, my very basic and important question is, how does the interiors of India look like when it comes to filmmaking, when it comes to content viewing? What are your views when it comes to Gadar? Is it that it's only Gadar that will work in the interiors of India? Or do you see that the palette is increasing?
Well, see, the interiors of India, when it comes to the demographics and psychographics of the audience that exists there, are very, very different compared to what a lot of us, ironically, within the entertainment sector, perceive it to be. Hmm. You know, I actually consider myself a little fortunate around the fact that, sure, I have, you know, grown up in boarding schools, spent a good 8-9 years studying in Bombay, working there, and therefore had that exposure to the urban element of India. But then I also came back here after a few years of doing that and chose to, you know, of course, the reason then was to be with the family, which is still a big thing for me. But it allowed me that direct exposure and access to the real audience that comes to our theaters, to, you know, to see them, to chat with them, to interact with them, to view their consumption patterns, to see the kind of movies they enjoy, to see what sort of moments in movies they react to in a good way, bad way, ugly way. So all of that was actually, to somebody like me, was actually born here. And then, you know, when I came back, a bit of a revelation in some sense. And what I realized is that the way all of us in urban India, or all of us in the entertainment sector that's functioning out of Mumbai, perceive them is actually very different from the reality. Very often we portray small town India in stories and movies that, you know, that are heartland stories. And looking at those and looking at the nuances and the humor in them, you really wonder, hey, which country are these people from? Because the people I know in my town, or even smaller towns where we operate cinemas and have our business, aren't exactly like these. And they talk a different language, they behave, you know, a different demeanor. And that's when I realized that, okay, there truly is a gap. And there's probably a reason why we as the Hindi film fraternity are not being able to strike a great strike rate when it comes to connecting with that audience with our content. You spoke about Gadar too, right? When the trailer came out, when the promos were out and about, I think most of the entertainment industry in Mumbai didn't give it a chance. They actually thought that, hey, Sunny Deol is an actor who hasn't delivered a big hit in 20 years, and this looks like a movie that's a little I'd say a little too massy and downmarket and all of that. And come that Friday, and everyone was somewhere between shocked and surprised, for the simple reason that nobody expected these sort of numbers. I'm pretty sure even the producers and the makers of the film were pleasantly surprised looking at what happened. And what actually happened, and you could see it on the ground here, was the fact that there was insane nostalgic value among the moviegoers. And the sentiment of the film, which was this father-son story, is something that resonated in a huge way. And is there anything really new and novel around the story? No. We've heard this story about a father going to a son's rescue a dozen and a half times every year. Was there anything new about the storytelling style in terms of any new techniques that are involved in terms of the technicality of filmmaking or any new, actors or new combination of stars? Nothing of the sort. It was good old vanilla vignette vintage Hindi cinema at play. And that is what resonated with the audience at large, and not just in Tier 2, Tier 3 India, but all over the spectrum. So there was really a realization of the fact that there's nothing like a Tier 2, Tier 3 film or a B and C center film. Either they are niche films or they are universal films. So even though Gadar is, so to say, a small town India story of Tara Singh, who comes out of a village in Punjab and does what he does, I'll give you another example. A movie like Dhool 3, right? The entire movie is based in Chicago. And that movie did incredibly well in small town India. But then let's give the example of another one, something like a Shubh Mangal Shanthan, right? Nice film, beautiful, based in small town India. Didn't do any business in small town India. It was an urban hit. So it's not essentially movies that are based in small town India that resonate there. It's movies that speak to the psyche and the mindset of small town India that do well there. And doing that is a serious craft that not too many filmmakers, especially in the Hindi film fraternity, are too well versed with in this day and age. So those realizations came in these recent years.
Tell me, actually, when you're talking about small town India and when you're talking about the chain of theaters, what is the kind of theaters and the chain that exists currently in India or Indian scenario when we talk about single screen versus, say, multiplexes?
So, Suchira, broadly, the exhibition sector in India is a universe of about 9,200 odd screens. Out of these, roughly around 3,000 are multiplexes, which include your national larger chains like PVR INOX on one side, Cinepolis, Mirage, Mukta, the likes of those. And then there's a longer tail of the exhibition sector, which is these single screens and independent multiplexes and stuff of the sort. Now, when I say an independent multiplex, I mean something like a Sterling Cinema towards VT, right? That's not a part of a chain. It's a standalone multiplex, but it's an independent property of sorts. Now, when it comes to the penetration, right, these national chains are limited to about 200 odd cities and towns of India. But the single screens, which actually have a larger presence in the smaller towns in Tier 2, Tier 3 centers, go up to almost around 1,500 to 1,800 cities and towns and villages. And that's where the long tail, the deep penetration into the heartland of India really happens when it comes to the exhibition sector. Broadly speaking, in terms of a divide, if I look at it geographically, almost 45% of the cinemas in this country, predominantly single screens and independent screens, are actually situated in the five southern states of India. That's Kerala, Tamil Nadu, Andhra Pradesh, Telangana, and Karnataka. The northern bits of India actually don't have that much of a density of screens for a reason that actually brings us back to the first question that you asked in the conversation we had, where if you realize broadly, the southern fraternities, especially Telugu and Tamil, have with a much higher degree of consistency in creating content that suits the palate of the Aam Aadmi of India. Compared to that, Hindi cinema went to elite and very urban, and therefore somewhere in terms of a connect, alienated the audience that exists in the smaller towns. And when there was an inconsistent supply of content to those centers and those cities, cinema halls started shutting down. So if you look at what the screen count was about a decade ago, It was roughly around 9,200. If you look at what it is today, it's again roughly around 9,200. Now, that's not because more screens have been added. TR, Inox, Cinepolis, Mirage, all of them have been adding an X number of screens every year. Those have predominantly happened in the urban parts of India. What we're losing out on the other side is that a lot of these single screens and independent screens that were in tier two, tier three parts of India have, ceased to exist. And that's why we are super saturating the more urban markets and the bigger cities, and we are actually taking off a lot of these smaller villages and towns from the exhibition map of India. So that's broadly where things are right now. But the good thing is we're still looking at a scenario where all these national chains and a few smaller chains are robustly adding more screens, and now also beginning to focus on the smaller towns of India to not just increase the count of screens, but also to give it a wider geographical penetration. And that augurs well for all of us in the industry.
So we have been adding, as you mentioned, we have been adding, we have been thinking of adding as well. 9,200 screens currently is where India stands at. Now I have two questions out of this. One, what you just mentioned in terms of the Hindi and the Telugu industry and the storytelling. So you're saying the Hindi went to more of an elite class, catering to more urban audience, and you're saying the South market is something that's catering more to Pan India. So when you're saying that it's catering more to Pan India, you mean that most of the India identifies more with the storytelling that's coming out from the South versus the storytelling. So their taste is more akin to a South film or a storytelling versus a Hindi storytelling, which is perhaps, I would say, more of a Dharma or a YRF that's catering to a much more wider audience, but still, that's more urban centric, is what you're saying. So what is it that these South films have in terms of their design, in terms of their visual appeal, in terms of their storytelling appeal, that's catering more to Pan India versus not even the biggest production houses in India?
So, Suchita, when I say, said that they cater to a wider demographic or to the Aam Aadmi, I didn't mean geographically Pan India or South India or North India. What I meant is that, socioeconomically, they cater to a larger, least common denominator of the social strata. See, 70-75% of India is the middle class or the lower middle class, or the people who are aspirants in terms of their economic status, right? And that is the audience that really doesn't have the ability to financially or intellectually afford a certain kind of cinema, which is elitist, which is very urban. So I'll give you an example, right?
Can I just button here and ask you that, are you also referring to the ticket prices here when you talk about socioeconomic?
Among other things, absolutely. So it's the right kind of storytelling at the right price point is something that they've managed to crack a lot better than us. So, Suchita, I mean, since we're having this chat, let me actually tell you a small story in a line, and you try and make a guess and tell me what film this is, okay? The uncle kills the father, and the son takes revenge. Tell me what story is this?
Uncle kills the father, son takes the revenge. Of course, that's Hamlet if I view it in a wider context. That's Shakespeare for me. Now, I don't know how you are saying that.
So, Suchita, that's Hamlet, sure. Is that also Lion King?
Okay, Hamlet could be the source.
Is it also Bahubali?
I've not seen it, but if you're saying yes.
And it's every third Bhojpuri film as well. So what I mean here is that it's not the story or how you mount it, it's the way you tell it. You can tell the same story in a manner that appeals to a much wider audience, to the least common denominator of the social strata, and you can also tell it in a manner that is just not intellectually accessible to the common man, which doesn't suit their palate. Right? And that is something that the southern fraternities have been a lot more efficient at. And that's the reason why you see more movies that are just focused very scientifically and sensibly on 70-75% of the audience there, rather than the people who live in the affluent parts of Chennai or the affluent parts of Hyderabad, right? And it's not that they are people who are only capable of that intellectually. I think it takes a lot more intelligence to cast a wider net when it comes to targeting an audience. And that's something that That I won't say the southern, because the southern fraternities are Tamil and Telugu and Malayalam and Kannada, which are very different from each other. But two fraternities that have really managed to do this well are Telugu and Tamil. Kannada, of course, is coming there with a KGF and with a few more films. And Malayalam is still a lot more rooted, still more about the novelty of storytelling than about mass appeal or about trying to just, reach out to a wider audience and giving them their 3 hours of escapism. So it's very different fraternities. But Tamil and Telugu are ones that have done well. And when it comes to Hindi, of course, there are many exceptions to the rule, right? Rohit Shetty. I think while a lot of people think that, hey, what is this? This is not cinema. This is just cars being blown away and all of that. I really think that he's a really smart filmmaker, because he's somebody who, if you look at his films and if you go into a cinema hall when his film releases, you'll see 4-year-old kids having a blast, and you'll see the elderly, you'll see the families, you'll see people going to one of those movies on a date. You'll see every kind of an audience in those movies. And to be able to attract that sort of an audience and get them excited about watching a certain film takes, I believe, sheer genius. So due credit to filmmakers like Rohit Shetty, Sanjay Leela Bhansali, Karan Johar, Suraj Bharjatya, Rajkumar Hirani, a lot of them in Hindi as well are doing it and doing it really well. I just wish we had more of those.
Since you pointed out that Rohit Shetty is a smart filmmaker, of course he is, which is why he's able to pull off big budget films, also have a very wider net. But just to sort of consider a point here is that a lot of filmmakers, so I'm just sort of going to dig it a bit in how filmmakers think, and then I want to understand that how does an exhibitor and distributor like you think in terms of that perspective? So the filmmakers generally are, I would not say all of them, but I would say maybe 80 to 85% in the Bombay industry do not want to get into the route of, say, a Rohit Shetty. They want to get into a route of, say, they want to get into a Ram Gopal Varma or a Anurag Kashyap, or in a bracket which is more gritty, which is more hard-hitting, which is more international appealing cinema, which is more world cinema that can travel the world. So they're not looking at small town India. They are perhaps looking at a small town in France or a market in US. That's how they're thinking, and that's how they're designing the films versus filmmakers in South. Now, you coming from a perspective of a distributor, exhibitor, what are your thoughts in terms of their thinking and designing process?
Okay, Sushila, since you mentioned the North versus the South scenario again, right? Tell me one movie in the last 2 decades that has made the kind of international impact that an absolute mass entertaining, right out there, desi cinema movie like RRR has. It's one of those movies that won the Oscars for its music, sure. But that apart, if you look at the visuals of people reacting in North America, and I'm not talking about the Indian diaspora, I'm talking about the locals there. If you look at the kind of run it had in Japan, now America and Japan as cultures are chalk and cheese. And here's a movie that comes out of Hyderabad, does what it does across the length and breadth of India, encompassing and, overlapping every linguistic and cultural barrier that exists within the country, and then goes on to become this mammoth across the world. So by trying to be a cheap duplicate version of the kind of syntax that you see in the West, we are still going to be a cheap duplicate. What will really make us go far is to be ourselves, to really embrace what's our own culture, our own language, our all our I mean, India is a nation of storytellers, right? For centuries, can anybody tell me how long ago did the Mahabharata or the Ramayana originate? These are stories that have been told across centuries, and that shows that we as a nation have been a nation of storytellers. And it's not just these stories. If you look at the kind of interpretations, the kind of commentaries that we've had on these, we've had some brilliant minds take, have had their take on these stories and tell them in different ways, different styles. So we really need to, rather than trying to cross over, first just embrace what's our own. Really capture the market that we really are in. And 1.5 billion people is roughly 1/6, 1/7 of the world. So let's really, tell stories that are our own. Let's really capture the imagination of our audience,
Yeah.
And I truly believe that when we are true to our own storytelling style, true to our own sensibilities, that is what will excite people in the West or in other parts of the world about us. Because by trying to be a, you know, a version of Scorsese or a version of, you know, any of the legends in the West or out of Europe or out of Hollywood, we are just not going to be as exciting, or we are just not going to be, you know, as appealing. So let's do our own thing, and let's really do what we are all known for. Let's have the song and dance. Let's have the spectacles. Let's have those claptrap moments, which is what our cinema is all about. And I'm sure by doing that, all our filmmakers will be able to not just make an impact nationally, but internationally as well. But having said that, big fan of a lot of stuff that Anurag Kashyap does. I really love Manmarzi. I really love Gulal. I really love a lot of, you know, films that are very alternative. I really enjoy as a viewer, not as much as an exhibitor because they don't make as much money, but as a, okay, I'm joking about that. But as a viewer, as a student of cinema, I thoroughly enjoy everything ranging from a Rohit Shetty to an Anurag Kashyap, because by watching and consuming these, you only learn to appreciate, you know, the diversity of cinema that exists in this country. You only learn a lot more academically about the different kind of tales that can be told. And the cultural and demographic diversity of India allows a scenario where at the right budgets, all kinds of movies can be made, and they can really reach an audience domestically itself, forget about internationally. So all for all kinds of cinema.
So yeah, but also something very important that you mentioned was that Indian filmmakers should stick to their zone and their territory rather than trying to cross over, in the sense that stick to your design of making films and not try and emulate the West. Because by sticking to your design like RRR, you'll be able to cross over faster versus by trying to emulate the West.
Authenticity. Okay. Authenticity is the word, Suchita.
Authenticity is the word. Yes, absolutely. Tell me, Akshay, in terms of OTT now, when we're talking about OTT versus theater experience, you said we have not added theaters, or the addition is there, but it's kind of slow, 9,200 theaters. But when you talk about OTT, suddenly there is a penetration of world cinema, international cinema that has gotten inside the mobile phones in small towns, in metros and all over India. And is that one of the reasons we are suddenly exposed to the international content, that people are actually not looking at theater as one of their major go-to for watching movies and are sticking to their mobile phones and smaller setups to understand, to watch all kinds of cinema on their mobile phones?
So, Suchita, I really would disagree with the notion that people are choosing OTT over theatrical for the convenience of it, because there's access to content from all over the world. In fact, on the contrary, I really think that access to content, not just from all over the world, but also from different fraternities within India, is really opening our palette up as an audience. All of a sudden, we are enjoying a Mammootty film in the northern parts of the country. All of a sudden, a movie from the Bengali film fraternity or the Punjabi film fraternity or a Chelo show or a Bayar from Gujarat suddenly starts to find an audience in different non-traditional markets. And the same is happening for world cinema, right? I really think that some beautiful surprises that we're getting as the exhibition sector. Can't remember the name of the film, but this Japanese anime film, and I seem to forget, about an year ago, released in many parts of India theatrically, with absolutely no promotions, absolutely no marketing and PR, and went on to score houseful shows on the trot all over the country. Now, this would not have happened had a large audience in India been exposed to Japanese anime, which, by the way, happened courtesy of the OTT platforms. So what the platforms are actually doing is great service even to the theatrical audience by not taking away from them, but by increasing the consumption pie, by increasing the variety or the, you know, the diversity of syntax of storytelling that is consumable and palatable to the Indian audience. And that, I really think, is a beautiful thing that's happening. But having said that, to get people to the theaters is a bit of a tall ask, because you really need to give them content that is worth their time Because it's
Yeah.
not like going back home after the office, putting on the TV, checking something out. You don't like it, you shut it off or switch to something else. There's a certain commitment of time, money, and effort that the audience puts in to go to the theaters. And we really need to, in terms of the content we put out, be compelling enough to deserve all those three things that the audiences give us when they come to theaters. So broadly speaking, I think there are three umbrellas that make content cinema worthy. One, of course, is the spectacle value, where you have a Bahubali or a Triple R or a KGF or any of these films that are huge in terms of size and scale, where you cannot enjoy those production values sitting at home and watching it on however big a TV you have. The second, I think, is immersive viewing experiences, right? So in Avatar, there's no way you'd enjoy watching a movie like that on 2D. You want to get immersed into that world by watching it in 3D, which is a technology that exists only in theaters at large. Or formats like IMAX, right? In Avengers Endgame or a Mission Impossible or Dead Reckoning. These are things you want to watch on a screen that's 45, 50 feet wide with Dolby Atmos and all of that. And the third, which I think is very unique to India, is what I call the collective viewing experience. So, in a stereotypical Salman Khan movie, in the climax, he's surrounded by the villains and the shirt comes off. And then there are 400 people who are going apeshit crazy, shouting, clapping, and whistling. And that ambience becomes the value add or the X factor in the consumption of that content. Watch exactly the same scene sitting at home on your TV, and you'd be like, what the hell is happening? But then, when there are 400 people going apeshit crazy and having a blast doing that, which is what you see in the movies of Rajinikanth, Vijay, Allu Arjun, Tarak, Mahesh Babu, and up here in, a Salman Khan film or a Tiger Shroff film or a movie like a Jawan, which a Shah Rukh Khan goes on to do, you see that happening all over again. And to experience that experience, you have to go to the theaters. And that's what makes it a compelling watch. The same thing happened with Gadar, where, while it was all about the action and the emotion and all of that, I think one thing that was beautiful, which I witnessed when I went and watched it, and I saw it Thursday, first show. So sure, people are, cheering for the dialogues and really, clapping and whistling when he does the action. But two of the songs that were recreated, which is Main Nikla Gadi Leke and Urja Kale Kaawa, when those come along, you see hundreds of people singing along. Now that to me is beautiful, right? And that is something that can only happen in a theater, where you're sitting between a few people to your left and a few people to your right, a few to your front and a few at your back, whom you don't know. You don't know their names. You don't know where they come from. You don't know their religion, their caste, their identity, nothing. And it's still a medium that's such a unifying force that brings people of all sorts of identities, all sorts of diversities together to experience those emotions together. And that, I think, is beautiful. So these are
But
factors that really make movie going worth it at the theaters.
absolutely. But these are factors, Akshay, you're pointing out in terms of the spectacular films, the big star films, the films that are immersive experience, films that are collective experience, which again will need a star for people to have a more active participation in the film and storytelling process. But when we talk about not big budget films, but when we come down to, say, medium budget films or even the small budget films or the very small budget films, because we are divided in various budget categories when it comes to movie making in India, how do you perceive about these other films in terms of the theatrical release? Do you see that small films are ever going to get a space in theater? Do you see that even small budget films will even get that kind of marketing budgets that's needed to reach people? Do you think that they even will have a kind of taste that needs to be reached to larger audience? So you see that, no, that's going to be niche, and that's how it needs to be planted and planned. And perhaps there is a future there or some kind of innovation that is happening in that space as well.
Oh, absolutely, Sushila. I'm truly a believer that if they're well told, small budget films definitely have a huge market. Let's take examples, right? One of the most iconic horror films of all times, Paranormal Activity. Or let's take an Indian example to it, right? Something like a Ragini M&S.
Yeah.
Is this not an immersive viewing experience? They absolutely are.
Mm.
In the theater, in the middle of hundreds of people, you are on the edge of your seat, and God forbid, out of fear, some person behind you shrieks out. Do you know what happens to everyone else in the theater while watching a horror film like that? It's crazy. Now, these are movies that were made at shoestring budgets.
Yeah.
A movie like Khosla Ka Ghosla, which evokes a lot of laughter, right? Didn't have a big star. It had Ranveer Shori, it had, you know, Parveen Dabas, Mr. Anupam Kher, and Baman Iran.
Yeah.
Now, movies like those that evoke that collective laughter
yeah.
are absolutely theatrical experiences, because those are movies that where the humor gets enhanced when
yeah.
people around you are laughing with you.
Yeah.
So it's about picking the right genres and telling tales in a manner that make them you know, collective viewing experiences, rather than only focusing on the scale and mounting them with big stars. You don't essentially have to do that. And you can absolutely get away with, and in fact thrive with small budget storytelling, as long as you make them in a manner where you are cognizant of the fact that this is going to be watched by dozens of people sitting together, and let's give it those X factors, or give it those moments that will make them all laugh together, or cry together, or, you know, heave a sigh of relief together, or just erupt in euphoria together. And as long as we can lace our storytelling with those kind of moments, they really become theatrical watches.
But do you think that our theaters, the exhibitors, people who distribute these small budget films, are equipped to take these films to a wider audience? Like you mentioned Khosla Ka Ghosla, but Khosla Ka Ghosla was many years back. But when you talk about a post-pandemic scenario, when things have drastically changed, when OTT has taken over, do you see that we are equipped in today's present context and scenario to take a Ragini MMS or a Khosla Ka Ghosla to a wider reach? And do you think the audience has a taste for it?
Oh, absolutely, Suchita. I mean, it's a matter of time. I truly believe that horror is a very underexplored genre in India. And we've had examples, right? So Vikram Bhatt and Mahesh Bhatt had a franchise called 1920.
Yeah.
And they had a, you know, a spin-off to that that came out earlier this year and did exceedingly well, incidentally, in smaller towns of India predominantly.
Yeah.
And I really think that a comedy like Zara Atke Zara Bachke, which came out earlier this year, did exceedingly well. So I don't think the palette of the audience or their preferences have changed beyond a point. They just need to be given something that, like I said, respects their time, effort, money, and also their intelligence to come to theaters. And as long as we can do that with our tales and be sincere to the job of entertaining and engaging the hell out of our audience, I'm sure we'll succeed in getting them back to the movies.
Tell me, Akshay, about your tie-up with Cinepolis. What is that, and what's the kind of films that you see getting into this chain of your tie-up?
Sure.
Yeah.
Forget about that. Who would have thought that before the pandemic kicked in and virtual calls and Zoom and Google Meets became a reality, you and I would be, I don't think we'd be recording this podcast with me sitting out of Nagpur and you sitting out of Mumbai.
Yeah.
So here's a live example of how technology has become so commonplace that it's a part of our daily lives without us even knowing it. And the same thing will apply to AI, where it's already become a part of our market research, a part of, you know, us trying to understand the demographics, the psychographics, a few nuances around the way we go about working. And it's only a matter of time before it makes deeper inroads into not just, you know, research and writing for stories, but also in terms of what you see on the screen, in terms of creating those universes and those worlds that the audience is intrigued by, in terms of its impact on the exhibition and the distribution piece of the value chain as well, where, who knows, maybe augmented reality, virtual reality, and a whole lot of newer formats will you know, make their way into the exhibition format, where in theaters, you will have an enhanced version of, let's say, what today is 3D. With all these technologies coming in and making it an even more immersive viewing and a collective viewing experience, where you are already seeing a few of those, right? Where you are on, I think they are few and far between, but there are content pieces which are interacting with the audience.
Yeah,
I think this Bear Grylls episode that happened with Ranveer Singh, if I remember, scenario where the audience on Netflix or whichever that platform was had the ability to choose what they want these two to do from a certain situation. And this is what the audience chose, a certain video or a certain leg that they shot together played out. So who knows, maybe this is the future of, you know, of exhibition. And very honestly, there's already technology that's at play. And we engage with technology companies on a regular basis to try and know what's happening, where you have these infrared cameras, which are installed in theaters, that are actually on a real-time basis capturing the, you know, the spread of the demographics, basis how many males and females and children there are in the theaters, the right choices of advertisements are played out to be, you know, directly targeted at a relevant demographic that's in the theaters. So these kind of things are already at play. There are already technologies that are tracking how engaged the audience is when they are getting up and leaving, when their eyeballs are going off the screen. So all of these are actually going to capture a lot of data and help us with telling tales in a manner that actually are more to the point and more on the bullseye. So these technologies are already at play. Right now, we are only scratching the tip of the iceberg. It's only a matter of time, Suchita, before, without us knowing it, they will be the new normal.
Akshay, tell me, in terms of perhaps your parting words, because this podcast is listened by a lot of independent filmmakers and actors, how do you see, in terms of filmmakers getting their film, independent filmmakers who do not make spectacular big budget films, who do not have big names attached to them, or perhaps not even a studio, can they perhaps increase the hit rate of taking their films to the theater? And what is the kind of possibility in the market that exists there?
Sushita, I'm so glad you spoke about this, because, you know, as much as I am the Dabang Singham wanted Jawan guy in terms of, you know, what I'm perceived as an exhibitor in smaller town India, I'm also a very passionate student of cinema, and there are a lot of indie films that I watch. A lot of indie filmmakers are personal friends. And very often, you know, as much as they are well-to-do in terms of their personal situation, very often as somebody who, you know, considers himself to be a part of this fraternity in some sense, and very heartbroken seeing scenarios where for small petty amounts, they're struggling to raise funds to be able to complete just the post-production of the film. Or they're being treated in, you know, in a not so nice manner by the exhibition or the distribution sector when they go and make a pitch to bring movies to the theaters. And that's the reason why, very interestingly, recently, with a bunch of these independent filmmakers, a lot of us who are on the business side of things, we actually started a conversation to try and see how we can, rather than this being a scenario where every indie filmmaker has to beg, borrow, steal to complete the movie and then struggle to bring it to the theaters, can we create a system that is not about anybody doing favors to an indie filmmaker or to anybody else, but a system that's economically viable for the entire value chain, where we can actually have a plug-and-play mechanism for indie films. Where they can be curated by some filmmakers who are supporters of them, who lend their face and name for the marketing and PR and awareness creation. A lot of us exhibitors, I can tell you this, Tuchita, as an exhibitor in smaller town India, there are just about 25 to 30 weeks in an year of 52 weeks where we have films that are bang on catering to the audience that exists in these towns. For a good 20 to 25 weeks in an year, we don't have appropriate, relevant content to play. And that's where, you know, a lot of our cinemas actually have that window of being able to take some of these indie films, market them well locally, and not in an ad hoc manner for 3 days before release, but in a systematic manner without spending too much of money and getting certain pockets of audiences excited about watching them. We're also making conversations around getting vendors like post-production studios, distribution entities on board, to try and see if they can, you know, rather than being vendors who have to be paid, actually come on board as partners to these indie films and have equity in them to allow them to be made at even more reasonable budgets and to be put out in theaters. So these are conversations that are happening. And I truly hope, Suchita, that we can make something that's, you know, exciting and most importantly, sustainable out of it. Because there's only an X number of times when I, as an exhibitor, or any exhibitor, will do a favor to a filmmaker who's making an indie film and plays him. beyond a point, I have to save my own home, and I have to make sure that the movies that I play in my theaters at least allow me to break even and make some money so I can pay the salaries to my people. And that's why these new systems, which would require a complete relook at the way we put indie films out in theaters, is required. And I can promise you, Suchita, that conversation's happening. All the right kind of people with the right intent are in that conversation. And I truly hope that in a matter of a few months, we can create systems which make it feasible for everyone, from these indie filmmakers to the actors who are a part of them, to be noticed or to be put out well, to the distribution entities that take them to theaters, to a lot of us, cinema halls. I really think that all of us will, it's only a matter of relooking at it and not going the conventional route. It's possible, and I really think we should be able to do this very soon and have more indie films coming to theaters. And with the hope that there's a large enough audience that wants to watch them and wants to watch stuff that's not the conventional that comes out over here.
Wow, that's such a great news for all of us. Thank you so much, Akshay. This is lovely, and it's ending in such a lovely note, a more positive note. Thank you so much for that, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Sujita. Truly a pleasure doing this, and I truly hope that all your listeners enjoy this. I mean, and if you want to edit this, you can edit it out, but I am all over the social media. Any of the independent filmmakers here or junkies of cinema who want to connect, you can hit me up on Instagram, Twitter, and thank you,
Yes.
Suchita, for putting me out there. Truly a pleasure doing this with you. Thank you.
Well, a lot of tidbits in this episode, but one specifically coming across that what the prediction of a film like Gadar 2 can be when a trailer comes out. And a complete contrast of the result. It shows that nobody knows how a film is going to fare with the audience. We do not know how an audience thinks. We do not know what an audience wants. Like, for example, he also mentioned Shubh Mangal Savdhan. That's a small town story that was expected to do well in small towns, but it actually did better in urban centers. Do you think you know your audience? Or do you think that you can convince somebody to go out there to make your kind of film and then put it out there and take it to the widest possible audience, which you might suddenly find when you put your film out there for the audience to watch? That's a point to ponder until we meet next week again. Take care, guys, and have a great weekend.